Musician E.G. Daily is best known for bringing to life some of the most lovable rebels in film and television. Pee-wee Herman's girlfriend Dottie in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Buttercup in The Powerpuff Girls, and Tommy Pickles in Nickelodeon's Rugrats. And that's just scratching the surface. After a lifetime of working in Hollywood, E.G. wants to change the culture of beauty and entertainment and spark a new conversation with her song, So Pretty, celebrating the beauty in all of us. Today, E.G. joins us from her home to talk about her amazing journey as a voiceover star, her music from hit films of the 80s, and working in her home studio with her family of musicians and filmmakers. Plus, plastic surgery procedures that are killing people, and an exclusive story of what happened when her ex-husband and Paris Hilton's sex tape got leaked on the internet. I'm Fausto Fernos, and this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Become a member and support this show at feastoffun.com/plus.
Hello.
Hello, is this E.G. Daily?
Yes, it's me.
Wow, I can totally hear Tommy Pickles in your voice. My name is Fausto Fernos, and this is Feast of Fun.
Fausto, I love it.
E.G., you're known for so many beloved films and animated series, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Happy Feet, Powerpuff Girls, Babe, Pig in the City, Rugrats.
Oh, thanks, darling. Thank you.
I noticed on your Wikipedia page, there is a mention that you may have at some point in time done the voice for Cherry on Pee-wee's Playhouse.
No, I did not. I just did Dottie.
Okay, Wikipedia, there's your answer.
I mean, you know, you never know. I sometimes don't remember half the things. There's been so many things. People will be like, oh my God, I heard you in this movie. I'm like, I don't know if that was me. And then I check the credits and it is me. So sometimes I've done so many jobs I can't remember over the years, but I don't think I did that voice.
Well, you've done so much. You started working in Hollywood at 8 years old.
I did. I started with a commercial agent when I was 8, and I just kept rolling from there.
You were Rita in Laverne and Shirley. You played a juvenile delinquent.
Yeah, I played the leader of the Angora Debs. That's me.
I remember that.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, the Bad Girls episode.
Yeah, that was so fun.
And unlike other child actors, you've had a really long, successful career, and you continue to go on.
What are you going to do? Like, stop living, right? I mean, I feel like I'm an artist, so I constantly want to keep being artistic, and sometimes ideas just come to me, and I just run with it, and I try not to caught up in the, we should stop now, because I don't know why. Try to just keep it going with constantly being artistic.
Well, you were saying you're getting caught up in the culture of beauty.
Well, the new song called So Pretty, which, you know, you guys are talking about. I've always been caught up in the culture of beauty. I like beauty. I love it. But what I've learned from my decades in the industry is that there's so much pressure to be beautiful for men, women, and children. There's so much pressure to be perfect on the outside. Like, I need to be thin enough. I need to have a big enough booty. I need to have a small enough booty. I need to be have a more ripped up belly if I was a guy, or a less ripped up belly. You know, whatever it is, it's the enoughs. Like, am I enough? Am I enough? And what my whole concept of this whole So Pretty video was about, there has to be a lot of love and work put on our insides, because you won't feel your beauty on the outside if you're not feeling how incredible of a human being you are on the inside. And that means how kind you are to others and how you take care of yourself. Good health is beautiful, and being considerate is beautiful. And there's just a lot in the realm of beauty, and I'm just trying to expand it with my message on this song.
Mm-hmm. But that's not a realization you've always had. Your daughters, Hunter and Tyson.
Yeah.
You just did a recent interview with the blonde one. Hunter?
Probably, yeah. I do stuff with them.
And she was saying in the interview that she thinks that you were a bit of a sexy boy chaser for most of your life.
Well, that is true. That is true. But I chased everyone. I was a sexy chaser of everyone. I chased everyone. That was my thing. You know, that was my kick. You know, my drug of choice was like just feeling in love with people and having crushes and intrigue. And I've since learned to like really look for different qualities in people now than I used to. But, you know, that was my fun. That was men and women. It was like fun for me. You know, that was so.
Do you identify as bisexual or?
Well, I have been with both. So I would say that I like to just say I like everyone.
Well, you know what the young kids these days, they say they are non-binary pansexual.
I like that terminology. I mean, I just think I really appreciate men and women of all kinds. And I really do. I love not feeling like I have to be in any kind of box as a human being. You know, I just don't, I don't like it. I like the freedom that I have, that I can look at a girl just as much as a guy and say they're just incredible. Like, you know, beautiful. Love that person. You know what I mean? I just like no limits.
When we ever hear child actors in the news, it's usually because they're struggling a lot of times with just growing up as individuals. And you seem like always had a really good head on your shoulders. I mean, it took a lot of wisdom to have the comedic timing to hold your own next to Paul Reubens as Pee-wee Herman in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. How were you approached to be in that film, or did you audition? Were you reading the script and said, oh my God, this is so wild?
No, actually, they just called me up and they asked me. My agents were like, oh, you have to go read for this part in this Pee-wee's movie thing. Now, I'd heard about his Pee-wee's Playhouse at the Roxy Theater in L.A., so I was kind of familiar with it, but I hadn't seen it. And then I heard they were doing a feature at Warner Brothers or whatever, and I literally just went in and auditioned with a bunch of other women, and they were looking
for to their cars, and so they never got there.
No, I didn't have to. It was in the cards for me, man.
And, I know, it's hard to imagine that role as with anybody else. You really embody that.
Well, they didn't want like a glamorous Hollywood actress, and that's my thing back then. Was like I was the sort of had this sort of nappy Jufro hair, and you know, and they didn't want like a perfect Hollywood looking person. They just wanted a real person. I think that's why Dottie comes off kind of just like a real girl, you know.
Well, it's so great that sort of Pee-wee Paul Reubens reprises. A lot of people don't realize that scene where he's a bellhop. And then they have Morgan Fairchild playing your character.
How funny is that?
That's actually a reference to a Cheech and Chong film.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Did you know that? Yeah, he's actually played a bellhop in another movie where he's giving Cheech and Chong a lot of attitude. And
that's
then so when
funny.
They did that scene, there were sort of fans of Paul Reubens who have been with his career for a long time. It was a shout out to that.
I didn't even know that. Wow.
I just found out about it this week. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Where did that come up from out of all of a sudden this week?
We are always researching stuff for the podcast. And
God, that's amazing.
And so right now we're in the process of trying to find incredibly strange Christmas music or holiday music.
I just sang at my mother's assisted living house for about, you know, for 40 or 30 80, 90 year olds. It was the most incredible thing. My favorite concert ever.
What'd you sing for them?
I just sang a bunch of like pretty standards. I did songs like Somewhere Over the Rainbow and Imagine. And then I sang a couple of Carole King songs. And then I sang Summertime. I just did some really beautiful, timeless songs. I sang At Last and Come Rain and Come Shine. It really was one of my favorite concerts. It was so darling. And I've been in there with my mom when there were other people singing, and people, a lot of them were just fall asleep. And I was able to just keep them all up and having a blast. And it was so, my mom asked me to do it. She was like, it would make me so happy if you could sing at my place for everyone. And I was like, I will do it. And so I went there today and I sang for this 80s and 90 year olds. And it was just lovely. Amazing.
Was your mother a little bit concerned about your career? Because a lot of parents do have anxiety about their children sort of pursuing a career in the arts, and especially in Hollywood.
I don't think my mom ever worried about it. Is that weird? I didn't remember her worrying about me because I was so ambitious from so young on. And I just kind of had a drive in me that manifested things. I don't even know how I manifest them. Like, if you were to ask me to go back and start over, I'd be like, hell no, I'm exhausted. But somehow she wasn't worried. I don't think she was worried. I was always finding ways to make money, whether I was like dancing to make money as a dancer, or, you know, or doing some little random B grade movie, or I don't know. She just wasn't worried. That's weird.
Was it difficult or unusual to work with Tim Burton? Because at that time he was sort of a relative unknown in Hollywood.
It was new. Well, I didn't know anything about him other than he had done this very cool documentary about a dog, or short.
Frankenweenie.
Yeah, which is great. And they were like, oh, this guy's going to be huge and he's going to direct this Pee-wee movie. And I had no idea about him. I just noticed that he was very interesting, and the way he worked.
Interesting?
I just think like the way his vision, the way he looked at things, and the way he was very particular. He just was a mad scientist genius director, I felt back then. And he is. That's what he is, a mad scientist genius director.
Well, in Hollywood, we see so many derivative works, and we're seeing it just seems like every movie that's coming out is a reboot of something. And at that time, I just would imagine that the trust that the studios had with Tim Burton and all these relatively unknown actors, you know,
I don't know how that worked out.
Cassandra Peterson, she probably was the biggest name associated with the film outside of Morgan Fairchild. And even she's not even recognizable in the film.
I know. I know. And I remember when I walked on that set, I was like, wow, this seems like it's a big project. Yeah. And these are all, I remember Tim was like new. So I felt like the stakes were in for all these people. They had high stakes for Pee-wee. They had high stakes for Tim Burton, and they were right.
So as part of the legacy of this really important, fantastic film, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, do you ever get invited to events or parties?
Oh, hell yeah. I'm going to Chaz Dean's Christmas party on Saturday.
Oh.
You know who Chaz Dean is? He does the hair products. Chaz Dean. He does the Wen project products.
And what's the relationship to him and Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
He's not. I should say that. He's a very talented Hollywood hair stylist, and he has his own hair products on QVC. I think he's done really well with all that, but yeah, there's always some cool Hollywood things going on here that I go to. I feel pretty fortunate. I have a lot of friends in this town. And was that the question? I think I got sidetracked on your question.
Oh, no, that's fine. I just want to make sure we have so much to cover.
I know.
You're responsible for giving life to so many beloved characters.
Wow, thanks. That's beautifully said. Wow.
And I imagine that like when you started as a voiceover actor, one of the biggest challenges is just creating something from nothing. They just show you a drawing or a description, and somewhere deep inside you, you sort of have to create this, the baby in Rugrats or, you know, the Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah. I was a little bit ignorant when I first started doing voiceover because I had done acting and I had always done singing. So I knew how to manipulate my voice as a singer, and, you know, I knew how to do that. But then when voiceover came around, because I was so ignorant about it, I met this guy, I did a play, and at the play, he was like, you're really good with your voice. You should do voiceover. And I was like, I never thought of anything like that. I mean, I'm an actress. I'm a singer. And he was like, you should really pursue this. So he was an agent, and he gave me his card. And the very first audition I went out for was this little character. They showed me a claymation picture of it. And I just thought, I know what voice I would do with that face. And it was just one of my gifts, was being able to come up with a voice that fit the face or the mouth. And it's a weird thing. It's a weird thing when you put it like that. But that first audition I went for was Tommy Pickles on Rugrats. And
get
it was
out
right
of here. That was your first role?
That was my first audition for an animated cartoon ever in my lifetime.
Amazing.
And then I just started booking all these others. I did like Jungle Cubs. I did Bagheera. I did Chalk Zone, Rudy Tabooty. I ended up doing Babe and Babe 2 and Baby Mumble and Happy Feet and Powerpuff Girls, Buttercup. It just went on and on. But I think one of my natural gifts is my ability to see something and then create a voice for it. And I don't honestly put a lot of thought into it. I just usually go by the first voice that comes out of my mouth. And that's usually the right one.
Well, as a young singer, did you ever hear your voice and wish it was less quirky? I mean, because you have a, like, you're kind of like me. Your voice is very dynamic and it's very squeaky. And, and as you know, for myself as a musician, as a singer at a young age, I was always like, God, I, you know, I really hate my voice to some degree. And I wish it was, you know, either more feminine or masculine, but it's more this, you know, ball of clay that you can stretch and play with.
Yeah. We like that. Right.
Well, it's something that took time for me to learn and embrace about myself. Considering that you started in show business at such a young age, was this something about yourself that took time to embrace?
No, because I changed my voice so much that, like, it could go from this voice, which is me, I guess, to, like, I can suddenly talk like this and be very proper. Or I can suddenly talk like an old lady if I chose to. You know, it's like, I'm not limited by this sound. And then I can get into, I don't really like that, you know, into a little girl or whatever. It's like, I don't feel like I've ever been limited by it. If anything, my voice just does everything I want it to do. It's like silly putty. You know, my voice can be torqued into so many different ways. I actually have a little bit of a cold right now, so it's a little bit messed up right now. But it basically can do whatever I want. Like my hair. I have great Jufro hair. It does everything I want, you know?
I get panicked because I talk so much for my various jobs. And I wonder if you have the same sort of anxiety. When you catch a cold, you're like, this is the end for me. Farewell, cruel world.
No. As a matter of fact, I couldn't sing all the notes I wanted to today, but it just didn't matter today. But I've never lost my voice to where I couldn't do a job. Mm-hmm. Even like some of my cartoon jobs, like there was one time where I had a bit of a laryngitis and it still worked. I could push past it for the character. Like if I was doing a boy, if suddenly I was talking like some kid who talked like this, you know what I mean? Like some preteen kid. So I was able to push past the colds, but there was one time where I had to go back and redo some of my lines because I had no voice left. It was like this, you know.
Yeah, you were on The Voice, Adam Levine.
You did your homework.
He said you have a beautiful, raspy quality.
Oh, yeah, I love that, right? Well, there you go.
You shady. Now, what is you're like, I'm not working with CeeLo Green, Christina Aguilera, nor Adam. It was Blake Shelton.
Very funny. Christina Aguilera. I never heard that.
What happened to your collaboration with Blake?
Well, I was just on the show for maybe like a couple months and then I got knocked off because I honestly was having like my kid was going through a little rough time and I hadn't slept the night before that knockout round. And I literally hadn't slept in a minute because I didn't know where my kid was. She was in that preteen age. And
oh, boy.
I was just stressed out. I was really stressed. And then that day I just like sabotaged that next round, but it was kind of right because I already got out of it what I wanted. And I loved working with Blake. I did actually learn some cool things from that man. It was interesting. He noticed about me. He's like, you always change it up because I'm pretty spontaneous. You know, I change things or I don't ever know what's going to come out of my mouth. But he said, there's a lot of discipline in trying to do it the same way twice. And he goes, practice that. And I learned something about that. Like, where there's discipline, there's freedom. Because I'm so spontaneous and such a free spirit, I sometimes don't lock down. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in locking down, you have more freedom to really kick ass. So I learned from him something like that. It was cool.
Blake Shelton was called by People Magazine the sexiest man alive this past year. In response, he said, sexy doesn't exist anymore, suckers.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. He's great.
I love that response.
He's such a character. Yeah, that's good because it's such a silly thing to say. And to me, you know, I don't know, just calling him the sexiest man on the planet is funny.
But, you know, that makes me actually, like, think he's sexy by responding
that way. Yeah, I do too,
way.
Because how sexy is that for him to not even get into the whole concept of that saying, that whole idea? It's just great.
Was that like a publicity stunt or like is the record label pushing for it? Like, how does it even happen?
I don't know, but will you let me know when you find out?
You want to get on the list?
I would like to get on that list.
E.G. Daily, Sexiest Man Alive, 2019.
That's funny.
Non-binary.
Tommy Pickles, sexiest little kid on the planet. Tommy Pickles. Yeah, so cute. A baby got a new sexiest.
Well, there's a reboot happening with the Rugrats.
Yes.
There's like tons of projects. Two live action animated films. I have no idea how that's going to go. 26 animated episodes all scheduled for release. The first film and the animated episode in 2019.
Incredible.
Can you talk about it?
I can't really say too much about it, but I will tell you that there is a reboot happening for Shizzle. I can't say a lot more about it other than it's really cool and the show's amazing. But I can't say too much because I haven't. Yeah, I just can't say too much more. But yes, that is happening.
When you're actually recording for all this stuff, do you get to see before you actually go into the studio to record your voice?
No, you don't ever really see any of the animation yet. You just get your scripts usually. Mm-hmm. And you just get to read them, but you don't see the animation till a year later or whatever when it's done.
I mean, you're in the pantheon of great voiceover actors of all time.
Thank you.
And actually, we've actually talked about you on the podcast before when we were doing this. We were saying like some of your favorite boys in cartoons are women.
Isn't that funny? I told you, I don't like any gender things. I like to open it all up. I love that women can play boys in animation. Just love that. It's so great.
And so, you know, in terms of like challenging Hollywood's obsession or dysfunctional relationship with appearance, it's kind of easy for you to say because you're in a dark room with a microphone.
Yes, I am. It's not really dark, but I'm in there with a microphone. Yeah. Usually laughing my head off.
What can we do as consumers of this kind of media, but also as creators to sort of have a healthier relationship with that? Is it just, you know, sort of move away from creating things that are based on people's appearance in the first place?
Well, I think what it is this. I think that there has to be a balance. It's about balance. So like trying to fix yourself up on the outsides is a bottomless pit. Almost to the point where some people are doing things to their outsides of their body that actually could kill them. You know what I'm saying? Like the Brazilian butt lift is one of the most deadly that there's. I've read that a lot of people have died on the table from a Brazilian butt lift. Can you imagine that?
You got me Googling this.
Google it. I'm pretty sure it's the Brazilian butt lift is known to be a dangerous one. There's been a lot of complications in that. But
I'm sorry, but the Brazilian butt lift is just injecting silicone in your rear?
No, Brazilian butt lift is when they inject. I think they your own fat into your booty I'm not a doctor, so I don't quote me, but I think they inject it into the booty and then sometimes it can get into a vessel and then travel into the vessel and could cause a stroke or can cause, you know, you have to research and read about it. But the point I'm making is that there's a lot of things that people do to try to make themselves feel okay on the outsides, which is understandable because we all want to look good, right? I mean, most of us, you want to feel attractive to yourself and others. But the problem is if you're not filling yourself up on the inside with being an incredible human being and doing good things for the planet and being of service and being a kind person and doing a lot of self-love, like meditation and affirmations, and really making yourself feel good on the outsides, you won't feel how good you look on the outside anyway. If you don't start with the insides, you won't feel how beautiful you are on the outsides, is my point. There's nothing wrong with wanting to look good on the outsides. The problem is that people are going a little bit crazy to the point where they're not feeling pretty enough or beautiful enough, and then they keep doing more and more and more and more, to where they don't even look like humans anymore sometimes. And then that's the problem. The problem is we have to love ourselves from the inside and feel good about yourself. And I'm encouraging, like, goofiness is sexy and beautiful. Like, I have some outtakes on my Instagram, which is Really Jadaily, where Instagram, I posted some outtakes from the music video, the So Pretty video, where I'm being a total goofball because I think it's really beautiful when people are being a goofball. I think that's sexy. Like when somebody's not caring how they look and are having fun and laughter is sexy and being silly is sexy. Like there's more to beauty than just perfect. Perfect is not beauty necessarily. I think.
Amen, sister. I mean, it's like I post photos of myself on social media just to get attention, you know, and I do feel like there is this sort of dysfunctional relationship. If you're an artist or a creator of any kind, where people start judging you on your physical body.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, hey, hate to break it to everyone, but we're all going to get older and we're all going to have like wrinkles on our necks and, you know, a little pot belly at some point, or this or that. And at some point you have to love yourself no matter what and do your best. But at the end of the day, make sure you're filling up your heart and feeling good about yourself so that you don't need to do so much on the outsides when gravity starts taking hold. And, you know, you can love yourself. Like, the scary part is some people can't appreciate themselves if they don't look perfect. Mm-hmm. They don't look like a perfect filtered selfie of themselves. They don't feel safe, and that's not safe.
Can I add to that is, even if you don't love yourself, you are still worthy of giving and receiving love.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what I love about dogs and children. Okay. Right, yeah. Guys, all dogs and children are, first of all, they're all bisexual, which I appreciate, because there you go. No lines, no boxes. They don't care if your eye fell out of your head.
No.
Or you have bad skin, or you're chubby, or you're too thin, or your butt is too small, or your butt is too big. They don't care about any of it. Dogs don't care if the other dog is dragging its back legs on the ground, or has no fur, is skinless, hairless. Nobody cares in the children and animal kingdom, pretty much. They just see the person, the soul, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's why I appreciate that innocence, because they appreciate the soul of that character, that person, that dog, that child, you know?
Well, you have two beautiful children, Hunter and Tyson.
Yeah.
You posted on Instagram this wonderful, I guess you guys are harmonizing on a Christmas song. On Instagram.
I think we did an Elvis Presley
yeah,
song.
That's so lovely.
Thank you. That's Hunter. She's the Hunter Daily on Instagram. And my daughter Tyson is I Am Not Mike Tyson on Instagram. And I'm really G Daily. But yeah, we did she actually joined me and sang that song at my mother's assisted living place today. It's an Elvis Presley song that my daughter Hunter and I sang together. It was just fun.
What a blessing to have so much music in your family.
So much music. It's crazy. Every day, all day in my house.
You're like a feminist Maria Von Trapp.
I love that. Whatever the heck that is.
The Sound of Music, the mom, the Julie Andrews, who taught her kids to sing.
Oh my God, I love that. That's what I am. That is what I am. My kids play. My daughter, Hunter, plays keyboard, guitar, ukulele. She sings. My daughter, Tyson, sings these incredible music videos. She's like, it's so fun. My daughter's boyfriend lives with us, Austin. He goes by Salty State. He's like an incredible director. He directed my So Pretty video, and he just did the YG rapper video. I have all talent in my household. It's so cool.
Is it hard to record music in your home? Because I didn't, for us, you know, we work so much. We tape a TV series, Cooking with Drag Queens, in our home, and we do this podcast. Come on down, girl. And part of it is like, it's a bit of a challenge because your friends and family are like, don't take it as seriously because they see this as more of a hobby, even though this is your job.
No, we have a studio and we do a lot of serious work in that studio. I recorded this So Pretty song in my home studio. She did a series of incredible videos, Tyson. They were all recorded on the home studio. I mean, we do serious work in my house. Plus, I have a recording booth that's strictly for my voiceover work. It's just like a little booth that's in this big walk-in closet that I have. I do a lot of serious work in my house. Actually, it's a working house. Yeah.
Yeah, and I can imagine. Well, it's good for taxes, but I think in terms of like your friends or family, sort of respecting that boundary. It is, you know, you have to be very disciplined if you're working from home and actually get those projects done.
Yeah, we don't have the rooms are separate anyway. So when there's people recording in the studio, then I can be in the kitchen entertaining people. My kids could be recording in the back room, the studio. So there is a boundary in the house. It works. It somehow works itself out beautifully at this house.
Yeah. That is so wonderful. Do you feel your daughters are able to understand and listen to the message about beauty that you're saying?
There were times in my life where I didn't think so, where I was like, mm-hmm, they don't give a shit. They could care less about what I do. But now they're 20 and 22 and they're so fascinated by my work. It just makes me want to crack up. My daughter Hunter will be like, Mom, like, how did you do all this stuff you managed to do? Like, how did you do it? You had no help. like, I didn't have nepotism. I didn't have family in the entertainment business. I didn't have money. I was a broke bitch. And I didn't have, you know, I didn't have anyone that knew the entertainment business around me. So she would just be like, how did you make all this stuff happen for yourself? And it's so beautiful to see her fascination with it. Cause sometimes I'm like, I don't know, girl. I was just like, you know, it was the Me Too movement all over the place for me. Like people trying to take advantage and a lot of weird behavior, but I don't know. I just think they are asking questions now of me of like, you know, just about my work and my talent and my voice and my acting. And they're fascinated now. But before I think I might have got off track of your question, but before it didn't seem like they really cared. They just would see me do something and not care. But now, because they're so interested in the arts, they're blown away by some of the work I've done. And it's actually helping me realize what I've done when I see my children's face and their intrigue with what I've done. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. I imagine that also makes you take a step back and really think deeper about giving your children a legacy and not just, you know.
I never thought of that before, but now I do. I feel that way. Now I feel
Come
like
on.
I'm giving. I didn't. I really didn't.
Up until this minute?
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying recently.
Yeah.
I'm not saying right this moment, but recently was the only time it started to hit me where I was like, I'm actually leaving my kids with some incredible legacy of our family. And, you know, I never thought of it before. Very recently, I never thought of it because I felt like my kids didn't really care. I felt like they kind of took me for granted, took my singing for granted, my writing for granted. But now my kids are like, Mom, get me a copy of that record you used to put us to sleep with, which was the Tearing Down the Walls album. I have this album called Tearing Down the Walls. It's all on iTunes, but I used to put them to sleep with this one song called Someday. And every night, I don't know why I picked this one, because it was kind of soft. And I would put them to sleep with these same little songs every night. And my kids recently were like, Mom, I want copies of all the old albums. Like, they never gave a shit before. You know what I mean? And now they're like fascinated with all of the work. And it makes me so happy because they get it. They get what I've been doing all this time. They get it now.
Well, your work is their work. Your legacy is their legacy. And now they're starting to understand that.
Finally, yeah.
My sister, you know, she was married to a pretty difficult, combative, abusive man.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And at a certain point, you know, the whole family was just kind of holding their breath, waiting for this divorce to happen, if worse things happened. And, you know, certainly like in listening to some past interviews with you, you know, you've had some really difficult relationships in your life.
Yeah, I really have. Yeah.
And with some very unsavory men who, you know, I don't want to bring too much of it up, but, you know, they're known for doing some unscrupulous things in the public eye. And I imagine
Who are you referring to? I'm just curious.
Sure.
Which one?
May I? I don't want to make you uncomfortable or anything, but I guess one of your a friend of mine, and maybe this is misinformation too. I guess one of your ex-husbands was the gentleman in the sex tape with Paris Hilton. Is that true?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Actually, that's my only ex-husband. He's actually really close to them. He's my family. Uh-huh. He's my kid's dad. And yeah, he was the guy in the Paris Hilton porno, but he's been an incredible part of my life. That guy. Incredible. He is like my kid's dad. We have over 22 years of being family together.
Forgive me if I'm a little confused, but so was he betraying Paris Hilton's trust, or was she betraying his, or was it a mutual thing?
No. Oh no. That whole thing was, if you really dug deeper into that, my ex had nothing to do with releasing that tape. They were actually hanging out, and that tape was in he had an old roommate, this guy, I don't mention his name, but who actually took the tape and sold it and signed it over for nothing.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, for like $50,000. Now, my ex-husband would never sign anything over for $50,000. My ex-husband's a businessman. He would have never done that. And now at this point, he never did. And then once it was out, everybody's like, he's a horrible person. He's bad-mouthed. The Hiltons were trying to slaughter my ex-husband. And be like, he's incriminating our daughter with this. And he's like, I didn't do it. And then You know, it was a big mishmash, but it ended up working out in that it ended up getting out there. And I believe everybody reaped off of it, including Paris's career. You know,
well, certainly, yeah. But, you know, those are not kind of gambles you want to take at all. You
no,
know?
But that's not.
I can imagine the feelings that were going through your family and their family at the time must have been a lot of heartache.
It was brutal for me going to my kids' school, and it was like a huge topic all over the world. It was on every newspaper, magazine, you know, the Paris Hilton porno tape, and trying to hide it from all the parents at PTA, like, hi. And they'd be like, oh, we saw the paper, the Paris and Rick paper. And I'm like, oh, you know, luckily my kids were so little. They'd be like, oh, mommy, we see daddy in the magazine with Paris. And I'm like, yeah, you know, just trying to camouflage. It was a lot. But the truth was, he didn't release that tape. That wasn't his doing. And at the time, everybody thought it was his doing, but it wasn't. And then it all got cleared up. And then it ended up miraculously. The universe took care of everything. And Paris became a household name. And she's doing really well for herself over these years.
You guys are friends. I saw that you guys were posting pictures backstage at The Voice.
Oh, Paris. I'm friends with her. Yeah. She and I are good, you know. There was a moment there where it was weird, a moment, which was right when I was separating from Rick, and I was just like, are you sleeping with Paris? And he'd be like, no. And I just knew, I was like, we were at the end of our marriage at that point anyway. And then she would be like, I love your ex. I love your husband. He's like my best friend. I'm like, are you sleeping with my husband? It was kind of like that. My whiskers were twitching. And then we break up, and then they're a couple right away. So that was the most painful time period, because I still love my ex-husband. And that part was super painful. But, you know, we had our own issues, and there needed to be a separation. And we separated, but it was definitely not because I didn't love him. It was because I loved him so much, and he had a problem with substance abuse, and he was abusing substances because he was an addict. And it was just a weird time, but he's an incredible guy, and we're family, we're friends, we take care of each other, we have each other's back, we raise our kids together. He's had his own life, he's been married twice, you know, to different people, Pam Anderson at one point and Shannon Dory at one point. But you know,
husband has had some extraordinary women in his life.
He knows how to pick them.
Well, he's a very good looking guy. Like I had to Google the because I actually never watched the video. And so I was like, when my friend told me about this, I was just like, I have to see what he looks like.
Yeah, no, Rick is a good, really looking man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's an interesting guy. He's a funny fellow.
And so I imagine, like, in the context of this sort of discussion on appearance, like, it's really important to send, because you actually wrote this song for other artists to cover, but then you decided just to put it out yourself.
Yeah,
it was too important of a message. Not
that's exactly
it.
Right. And people are like, well, maybe you should give it to like one of the young pop artists, you know, the real young, beautiful, amazing pop artists to do. And I was like, it's not about age, this one. That's why I felt the message was so important. It's about every age, and it's about every person. And when we did these, like, we got these submissions to us, you'll see at the end of the video, just normal people submitting their idea of beauty. And we got so many submissions from people. And it's funny because we got as many men as we did women. We didn't expect that many men, but we got as many men as women submitting about the lengths they went through to be beautiful and feel good about themselves. And then we got the same submissions from those people talking about their idea of beauty. And it's so lovely to hear people's concept of beauty.
The only heartache I have of doing this podcast is we got to meet such extraordinary people as yourself. And you guys are all scattered all over the world.
Where are you at?
We're in Chicago here. My husband usually does the podcast with me, but he had a previous commitment that he couldn't get out of. So
I'm supposed to be in Chicago in March, I think. C2E2 in Chicago, I think.
Oh, well, we have to definitely get together.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I haven't 100%.
That's the comic book convention. I guess Rugrats will be in full swing at that time. So they're going to be definitely getting you guys to travel around the world.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, I think I'm going to be there. Like, if I am there, I'll let you know and go visit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
EG, I just want to thank you so much for your generosity. I do value your time, and I do work really hard to learn about the guests, you know, so we can get a good interview from you, but I see all over the internet, you've done so many interviews where sometimes, you know, I feel like the interviewer sometimes gets very superficial on the question. They go like, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah. Well, that's why this interview has not felt like an interview. I feel like you're one of my best friends and we're having a long conversation. It's beautiful.
I really admire your generosity and patience in dealing with that unknown factor in an interview with somebody who may not necessarily be prepared. And I think that's just talks about your character as a person, how kind you are to somebody who's just getting started or struggling.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate your interview with me. It's awesome.
What kind of plans do you guys have for the holidays? Hunter, Tyson, and EG.
Yeah. And my salty state, my daughter's boyfriend, who's part of the family. We're actually going with I'm taking my daughters and Salty. don't forget to look them all up. The Hunter Daily on Instagram.
Yes, I'll put up all their links.
I am not Mike Tyson. And Salty State, he's an incredible director and Real EG Daily. But we're going with Salty's family because I'm very close with his family, my daughter's boyfriend's family. And we're all going to Costa Rica for 10 days, which will be really fun. So, yeah, we're going to go kick it in the heat, warm, and they're going to surf. And
you know, Costa Rica is where a lot of those Hallmark Channel holiday movies are filmed.
I noticed that. That's right. I think Debbie Gibson's a friend of mine. I think she might have shot one there.
Oh, I have to tell you this wonderful Deborah Gibson story.
Yes, Deborah. I love her.
She was in town with Eartha Kitt and Ricardo Montalban, the young one.
I love them.
They were doing a benefit for an AIDS charity at a local cabaret bar. And so Deborah Gibson sits down next to this drunk guy who pulled out probably $2,000 in cash.
All right. Yeah. He asked her for a lap dance.
Throws it on top of the piano and says, "Sing, I Get Lost," in your, you know, her classic song.
Of course.
And she was so generous and so sweet to perform that in front of Eartha Kitt and everybody. And it was an extraordinary experience.
Deborah's awesome girl. I mean, she's the real thing. She goes around and sings. And I mean, she's a real thing, that girl. I've done a bunch of things with her. Mm-hmm. I just think she's the real thing. She's a true artist.
She is.
Loves it. Loves performing, you know.
And she's a part vampire because she hasn't aged a day.
Yeah, she looks great. Same as Taylor Dane. Like, Taylor's a friend of mine, and Taylor's constantly on tour. I'm like, girl, you're whacked. She's always on tour, and it's so great because she's a true artist. You know, real artists keep doing their thing. I really love all those girls.
You have an extraordinary circle of talented friends, and that's just wonderful.
Thank you, honey. Well, thanks so much for having me and for being so knowing so much about the stuff to talk about. It's really did a good job on your research.
EG, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us tonight. It's a real pleasure.
My pleasure, honey. My pleasure. So thank you.
You have a great night.
You too. Ciao, Ben.
Bye-bye. Yeah. EG Daily lives in Los Angeles, California. Her new single, So Pretty, initially intended as a single for other artists, but the message was so important, she decided to put it out there herself. It's available through her website, egdaily.com, and of course on our website, feastoffun.com. We want to thank you guys so much for listening to today's show. I'm Fausto Fornos, our associate producer, and my husband is Mark Felian. Tomorrow we will be talking about Pee-wee's Christmas special with Charo, Grace Jones, and the Del Rubio triplets. Don't miss that. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.